Hi, HR Nation, it's Chris Rennie. Welcome to HR Leaders, the show where we interview today's most successful and innovative HR practitioners 5 days a week. Today, we're joined by Rebecca Ellis, Director of Global Learning, Development and Change at Allegion. Welcome to the show, Rebecca. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. Well, I'm for everyone that can see your background, how impressive. I feel like you've just shown me up now.
I'm humbled by that. Thank you. Yeah,
for those of you who can't see it, it's just an amazing background full of all very interesting homely books and all sorts of things. And I feel like my background that you guys know is pretty new. So definitely one up there on me. Rebecca, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself personally and your journey to where we are today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think like many in HR, I'm kind of an accidental tourist. I never plotted out to be on this journey. I didn't even know HR was something you could study at university when I went to university. So that's how accidental.
Was it called people relations or something like that? Probably.
Personnel management. So I grew up in a small town in southern Indiana, a farm town. And all my family were small business owners. So they did HR, but I didn't know that, and they might not have known it was called that either. But I ended up being a math teacher as my first career. Funny enough, I had never had a female math teacher, and I wanted to be in something male dominated. That was like my only career goal, was to be in something male dominated.
That's cool that was your driver, though. I love the fact that I was thinking math teacher, but then the fact that you said it wasn't even about the maths, it was about entering.
Probably could have taught anything. I'd never had a female math teacher, you know, come to find out like teaching is primarily female dominated, mm-hmm. As is HR in a lot of ways, I think. Yep. And so it is kind of funny to think back of that being my driver and yet, not necessarily what would have led to a fulfilling career, right? It was just kind of a teenage, probably rebellion type of attitude to have. That's kind of how I started, and I have always been interested in developing people, and clearly that has been a theme throughout my career. It was actually my sister who got the first kind of corporate job in our family, and she's the one that introduced me to the idea of a corporate trainer. She worked for this big bank and said, hey, when you get done teaching kids someday, you could maybe think about teaching adults. That's what people do here at my company. They teach us leadership development and how to use computers, et cetera. And frankly, the idea of being able to use the bathroom whenever I wanted to was attractive enough for me to look into that a bit.
That's so strange that that's actually a thought process that you
can use. I know, right?
But well, it makes so much
three
sense.
Times a day to use the bathroom. So.
Yeah, my mom was a teacher as well, so I understand.
Yes. Yeah. So no, it actually gave me a chance to think about my career beyond school. And I probably didn't know to label it at the time, but I'm more driven by like pay for performance. And I don't know there, but teacher unions here pretty much dictate your pay, and it's by tenure. And so like the guy next to me, he was handing out spreadsheets or worksheets and, you know, really just not doing a lot to engage his classroom. And he made $15,000 more than me just because he had been there, you know, 15 years longer. And I was creating like experiments of how to learn pi by bringing your bike to school and pushing it around the track and finding your own formula for pi. And I got paid, you know, like I said, a lot less, and felt like I was doing a better job, maybe, of engaging students anyway. And so that was probably for me what was like, oh, this is not how I want to be motivated the rest of my life, to feel like I'm always doing more than what's expected, but yet I can't be paid that way. Corporate's been a good fit from that perspective for me.
And on that point as well, teachers, I think all over the world, are massively underpaid anyway.
It's a travesty.
It is, especially to the people that we're trusting with our children as their first learning experience. So, you know, you came across the corporate world, you realized, wow, okay, there's like an aha moment. There's this whole other world out there for you that kind of goes along. What did that first introduction into that world look like? How did you get the first job?
Yeah, so I did it probably the safest way possible by taking a training coordinator role inside of an education institution. So I didn't go straight to a corporate kind of for-profit. Right. I went to work for a community college and kind of tested the waters there. And I started my master's in instructional technology at that same time. So it gave me a safe place to kind of build skill and learn and fail forward in that way.
What is involved in a master's in instructional technology? That's a new one to me.
Yeah. So it's basically an instructional design, but at Indiana University, we have a high focus on human performance technology, or the HPT discipline. And so it was back in the late 90s, early 2000s, much different than it is today. I did learn Flash and a little bit of web design, but clearly the web wasn't quite ready to push in the bandwidth wise.
You were a bit
the type
early
of
then,
e-learning.
Really, I can't even imagine e-learning back then.
It was really ugly.
I can imagine. I bet the UX was so bad that no one wanted to use it.
Oh, really, really bad. I mean, a lot of it was built through things like Dreamweaver and then your Camtasias and things like that. There weren't the Articulate Studios and kind of the DIY WYSIWYG tools that exist today. It was coding, right? I had to like learn HTML, Flash, that type of thing. The university didn't invest a lot to teach us in that technology.
Because they couldn't afford the people to teach you it.
Yeah, this is a career where you have to sign up to be a lifelong learner. There's just not an option, right?
Yeah.
To completely retool. And so really what they were teaching was adult learning theory, design principles, a lot around cognition. That's kind of where I got my interest in cognitive load and cognition and, just how we process information best as an adult. So we spent a lot of time storyboarding and writing, like technical writing, which was interesting to me. And because I had studied math and,
I was about to say, come very handy.
Yeah. Because of that, you do end up being a bit more of a computer, person. I found that transition to be quite simple. And I actually enjoyed the programming quite a bit.
Yeah. That's what I struggled with. I'm actually obsessed with technology, but I really struggle with the mathematics. And I wish I didn't, because I really, really, really growing up wanted to be a programmer, and I just struggled so much with it. I was like, come on, it's so hard, so tough. Did you realize why so many people can't do it? It's very difficult.
It is difficult. And, it's just the way we're wired, either, kind of a strong interest or capability in that or not. And I think clearly we can undo some of that wiring with training, but if it's not a strength, then I would tell people too, not to go too far down that.
I was trying to force myself. I was like, I'm more of a creative, the artistic guy. I'm not the analytical guy. Unfortunately.
Have you ever taken those left brain, right brain tests where it tells you if you're, I'm in our whole grad class, I was the weird, like dead center. And the professors are even like, oh, that's kind of an anomaly.
That is an anomaly. It's very rare you get people that have both sides. And if you do, then and normally they're like insanely successful people.
Or just insane, people may argue.
Or just insane. You're right.
Which do I want to be today? But I do love creating. Yes.
Yeah. But if you look at most successful co-founders of big, brands that are out there now, they're normally they had one of each.
Yes.
They had like the creative guy, and then they had someone who could actually develop the apps and code, etc. And then so it was like and then you got the creative guy to bring it, to package it, to sell it, right? And to bring it to life. It's very, very rare you get someone that has both as well. So that's amazing. I think my business partner is the same, because I'm like the crazy person in the office that comes out with new products and just constantly trying to disrupt what we're doing internally and looking for new and better ways of doing things. Introducing different technologies, and he's kind of like the foundation, making sure everything runs. He's process driven, making sure he just keeps me on a straight and narrow. So
yes.
I think we complement it. He's kind of too safe, and I'm like the complete opposite. So we kind of like a balance. Where we are today, then? Now you're at Allegion. Tell everyone a little bit about the organization, the people that aren't aware of the business.
Sure. Our organization will be 5 years old next week, and we were spun off of Ingersoll Rand. It's basically the safety and security divisions of what was Ingersoll Rand. So we make door hardware and doors. And Schlage is one of our big residential brands, but we have brands all over the globe, including some there in your region as well. So yeah, it's actually a pretty interesting company. We act a lot like an innovative startup company, always trying to get new products and new ideas out there. Clearly door handles haven't changed a lot over the last few decades, but the technology surrounding them has.
Smart locks.
Smart locks, connected devices. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's an interesting place to be, a really good culture, great leadership team. And I have the responsibilities of our global learning, talent management, and change management practices. And so I get to work all over the globe with leaders, helping make their initiatives more successful than they are today, and focus on developing their folks. And we're mm-hmm. kind of on a mission right now to future-proof our talent, to keep them out ahead of the curves that are coming. So
yeah,
it's a great job, great company. You know, it's one of those things when you find your purpose, like I've joked, like, you really don't need to pay me to show up here. I would do the work
anyway. To get up and go in the morning.
Right. So that's important.
I love speaking to people like yourself that work into industries that are traditionally, you know, the world of doors hasn't changed.
Right.
But what I love is how technology can completely change an industry. So your one's a perfect example with, you know, smart locks and automation and what that means for you now, the talent that you have to attract and train, the different skill sets now within Allegion that are now required.
So. Yeah, it is really interesting. And there are so many industries in that position right now. It's just kind of an exciting time to be in any kind of manufacturing or product development. And the user experience is just demanding such a different, take than on what we probably have traditionally been used to. So pushing some boundaries there. And I think being as customer oriented as possible helps you stay in front of it, right? It's hard to predict otherwise what really the demand will be. I think the customer owns that more probably now than they ever have.
Yes. And if you don't listen, you will not exist. So that being said, back to your own organization, how has that changed your hiring in terms of, because you're competing now for a very, the war on talent in that space is huge. And trying to attract that type of talent in your organization mm-hmm. against all the other brands out there that may have more of a brand name and familiar to these organizations. How are you guys separating yourselves from the rest of the pack? And also, how are you upskilling the current employees that you have in your organization?
Yeah, great question. I think we wouldn't have said that we would compete with Google for talent a decade ago. But we
yeah,
do,
so I mean, right? Yeah, that's just,
and so that is the reality. And with 4% unemployment, I mean, you're right. It's a candidate's world, right? And not so much an employer. So really it's about differentiating yourself from a brand perspective, being able to tell your story around your culture and helping people get there, right? Like not just hiring for the skills that we need today, but really thinking about what we need long-term. And it is changing a lot to a more digital type of talent landscape from that perspective. Mm-hmm. But you know, you bring up some interesting points around what we expect today. And I think about this with my own kiddos. So I have a 16-year-old, so she entered the workforce this summer for the first time, and she hated the way that she was trained. And these kids, in particular, like you said, you know, you kind of have just grown up in this digital world. They're not, complacent and ready to just accept what we tell them is the way that they will be developed and the way that they will learn. And I do think there is some interesting implications for that in terms of the way that we onboard and provide kind of career and learning journeys for people. Career ladders, I think, are kind of old and archaic. I don't necessarily particularly subscribe to them myself, because I think, you know, when I've looked at some that even my mentees have made, you know, they're projecting themselves into a position in 10 years that I frankly don't think will exist. And so how do we keep more flexible around the capabilities that we're building and not so much this title or this job that we're seeking?
Yeah, this manager, director, executive.
Yeah, it's ladder. Like you've got to be more agile than that in your thinking. And, you know, I've had a chance in a couple organizations to create my own role. You know, it's like when you go on Broadway and they're like, this role was originated by, you know, it's like you get to be the first in it. And that would never be on a career ladder. And so
this episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. 2/3 of employees have 1 foot out the door in 2024. And the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
So that's what I try and hope to dispel for folks that I'm particularly helping develop is think about what you're most passionate about, what your purpose needs to be 10 years from now, and what kind of jobs and roles could be created to fill that. Don't think within the constraints of what exists today. I saw some statistic that 67% of kindergartners today will be in jobs that don't even exist.
I believe it.
Right. So like your new baby, right? Like they're going to have
Robin's going like, what are you doing, Chris? Yeah,
does not even exist. And so if you think more about, and I know my 16-year-old going to college, she thinks she knows what she wants to be. And I'm telling her, find a career, right? You need to make money. But know that this will be a stop in your journey and don't rest and start to identify yourself that way. Like I have friends whose identity.
That's the problem. You need to taste. Career. Yeah. You need to taste multiple things. Like the biggest problem I think, and I completely agree with you that people say, what are you going to do when you grow up? You're like, I don't know. Like the answer is that you don't know. You're going to try, but the same reason that you're where you are and I'm where I am, that I had no idea that I'd be here. And sound like from what your story earlier, you had no idea you'd be where you are right now.
Right.
But what we did, we tasted different jobs. We tasted different experiences along the way. And then we found what we wanted. I think the problem is we put pressure on everyone and kids, especially saying, I don't know what I'm going to do. I have to choose something right now. No, you don't have to choose anything.
No. Yeah. And I think there's harm in being too restricted in that choosing, right? Because when it doesn't work out, then I've noticed people who've been kind of destroyed. Like it's a bit of a having to like refine themselves, where if you always say, like for my daughter, she thinks she wants to be something in healthcare, maybe nursing, maybe sports psychology. But I'm like, if your brand is about helping heal people, you can do that in a lot of different ways without
feeling on your own.
Selling out. Right.
You don't need to work for a company, for example.
Yeah. You don't even need, to think about a job that exists today because you may be able to invent your own. Now that being said, there are core skills you have to get in there.
Sure.
Really things, right, that you have to learn, and why she needs to get a good grade on her chemistry test today, right? Because if that's what you're going to do, like you need to figure some of these things out that you're good at. But like she's really high in emotional intelligence, and I keep telling her that is more important than anything else. Like who cares?
Yeah.
If you don't do great in chemistry, although I would say if you're going to study medical, you probably should be good in chemistry.
That's a good example where you should. Yeah. Like, there's so many examples where people are studying things where you don't need to study that.
Okay, so work on your emotional intelligence. You know that's a strength of yours. You've seen that throughout the years. And so focus on that and honing that because it's portable, right? Where a nursing degree might not be as portable into the next career that you decide to choose.
I'd love to hear your thoughts and for you to share your thoughts on technology and the impact on learning, especially when you talk about the 70-20-10, the way we currently operate. So can you talk more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think your story about Googling it is a great segue because the reality is we are used to learning information via Googling it these days. And that more on demand, I want my knowledge when I need it, is where we're headed. And the 70-20-10 model, for those who aren't familiar with it, it's a learning model or a development model that has been in existence for a couple of decades now. It basically says 70% of what we learn is through experience, so trying it. 20% is through getting coached, or given feedback on a capability we're trying to build. And then 10% is the actual formal learning of that capability, be it a book, a podcast, an actual training that you're sitting through, a conference. But most, basically what that says is most of what we learn is from doing it and then people telling us how well we are doing it. Well, first of all, I should say this model was actually not built on solid academic research. And so I didn't know that until recently, and it was actually quite surprising to me to learn that because it almost feels like it's been such a foundation, like a gospel in our field, like the Bible of how you do development. And it was two different people's experiments where the numbers kind of looked nice to cleanly line up. And so therefore 70-20-10 was built, but no one was actually out there doing a hypothesis that tested exactly this. So that was curious to me in and of itself, but the more that I've thought about the on-demand take on learning, I honestly don't think 70-20-10 matters much anymore. When you're Googling it, you are doing the 10%, so to speak, of learning, but then you might go to apply it in that next minute in a way that is still learning, so to speak. So
yeah,
the artificial intelligence, the machine learning, all of that, like the more that we're learning in real time, the less there's a distinction between what was the 70, what was the 20, and what was the 10. And so I don't
do it all at once, right?
Yeah, you're kind of doing it all at once. And that's the goal of truly like embedded performance support, as we would call it in our kind of technical term. And, you know, I think back to Microsoft. Oh my gosh, remember Mr. Clippy, that little bouncy paperclip that would come in?
Yeah.
Like that was the old school embedded performance support, right? And now it's so much smarter. In fact, there's like chatbots, right? That I think MIT's got one called Otto. And if you want to know how to coach an employee in a difficult situation, you can respond in this and it will give you cues and you can almost like practice a conversation with this chatbot. It will tell you, you know, well, they could say this. And so you might want to say that. And what would you call that? You're learning how to do a difficult conversation. You're getting kind of coaching and feedback, like what you might have said. It will tell you what was good or bad about that. And then you may be even applying it right there in real time. I mean, I would doubt you'd have your chatbot open while your employee's sitting in front of you having that difficult conversation.
So what did you say again?
Type that in. I mean, let's think about like Google Glasses or these, you know, Pixel earbuds.
Feeding you the information. Yeah.
Who knows? In the future, it could be more real-time performance support. And I think, you know, there's a belief as a learning professional that our value has been curating. And that's like the word of 2018. I just believe everyone wants to curate something now, even at my grocery store, they're curating fruit. I've noticed on signs, which is crazy, but everyone wants to be curating something. And that's like us trying to predict what someone else needs. And I don't think there's a long career in that. Honestly, we've got to start thinking about how we embed learning in the work that's happening. And a lot of people are writing and kind of talking about ways to do this in the flow of work, at the point of work. But as learning professionals, we are no longer, I don't think, in the best position to predict what people need. They know what they need and they'll go get it when they want it.
Your job is to make sure that it's available in a platform and in a way in a delivery system that makes it easier, and they can do it in any way, shape or form that they want that fits their needs.
Yes. And if there is a single point of truth on something, making sure that's available, right? I don't know how many things have that single point of truth, but certainly leadership does probably in some way. And from a customer service perspective, there would be one way you would want to, you know, employee trained to handle something. But
it's part of that cultural shift, right? Whereas in the past, you know, the previous generation would wait until their business or comes to them with the solution to the learning team. Whereas now we've grown up, like, you know, my nieces and nephews, they don't need to ask anyone. They know they can type it in YouTube.
Exactly.
They're not waiting for anyone, their teacher, their, you know, professor, anything. They don't. And so when they go into the workplace, they already operate that way. They're not sitting there for their team to come and help them solve their problem. They're like, I've got Google and I've got YouTube. What else do I need? And I've got podcasts and I've got TED Talks and I've got everything else. And so your job, and what I find crazy and frustrating is that we're not bringing that same experience that they're having outside of the workplace in the workplace.
You're exactly right. And that is the thing, like these smart technologies, they are making people smarter, and maybe they aren't building like the same level of subject matter expertise, but the speed by which this knowledge is being acquired is unmatched by anything we can curate and push, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's how to best enable that. And there's tools now and technologies like XAPI, it's also called 10CAN, that lay over these learning management systems that can find out what people are going to learn, going out to seek information on. And so I think that's, you know, a lot of what we've got to figure out is kind of our ecosystem around learning, and then what people are going to out to find out, and then how we better serve up the things that may be a gap in what they're seeking versus what they're finding. Recently I had someone ask me about why we dumped all of our desktop publishing or, you know, Word, Excel, et cetera, out of our learning management system. And I said, well, you tell me, if you were going to look for how to run a pivot table, would you watch the 15 or 20 minute online class, or would you Google how to do a pivot table? Yeah, right. Exactly. Or watch the 3 minute YouTube video on how to do a pivot table. So I'm not going to invest in content that is not the most logical.
It's already there. Why are you trying to recreate it? And right. What I love are loads of LMS systems now. They just allow you to bring in the external content.
Yes.
So, you know, I've even been contacted recently by a few universities who said, can we include your podcast in our LMS for our students? And I was like, sure.
Right.
If you want to bring them in there, then you want to bring all the, you know, they're literally just taking the URL off our YouTube.
Exactly.
And just adding it into the LMS.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
You know, categorizing it into a, you know, here's a playlist of interviews with HR leaders for their students. And there you go.
Right. That's exactly right. Because if you have a URL, you can make a learning asset out of that. Yeah, you can link it into curriculum, into playlist, into all of those things.
You can measure it. You can see everything you need to do is right there. Yeah. We're doing the same thing. We're building our own LMS right now internally using a platform called 360 Learning. And we're doing the same thing. We're just taking the URLs from our podcasts, URLs from our YouTube videos, bringing that in. It automatically brings in the thumbnail, the context, the title, everything, right? And then we just brought it into playlists and courses. As well. It's so simple.
The changes coming in the learning and development space, I think, are pretty radical. And the machine learning in particular and AI applications are just fascinating. There's some case studies. I have a kid.
Hello.
I forgot our routine was happening here this morning.
That's a good routine.
Yes, he's my baby.
Is he off to school?
Off to school, my little 10-year-old. So pretty precious. There's an example where Dell decided to start putting AI into their onboarding curriculum for new coders. And I'm going to talk about a rapidly developing field, right? And where you need some quick speed to competence. They dropped it from 50 days to 8 days using AI. And even better, those folks had code in production in 37 days compared to the previous way to get them to contribute was about 100 days. So we've got to start thinking about, you know, virtual reality, embedded performance support, AI, how all these things fit in to the flow of work. And people are expecting it, to your point. It's especially this next generation, they are really going to push us to think differently about how they absorb new knowledge. And they are used to going it and finding it themselves and doing it more on demand. And we've got to get things out there so that they can find what they need to when they want to. And I keep saying the next generation. I mean, it's what I would prefer as well, right? And I'm certainly not.
Yeah, by the way, yeah. We say next generation. Yeah. Everyone's doing this right now, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but the next generation is going to have zero tolerance for it.
No. You know,
my
imagine them walking in and not having Wi-Fi. And they're like, what?
Yeah, exactly. Well, my 16-year-old, when she was about 9, said to me, like, why are we listening to the radio? And I was like, oh, because we're driving around town running errands and I like music. And she's like holding up her little MP3 player, which she was lovingly downloading like every Jonas Brothers and Hannah Montana to the time. And she said, Mom, I have music. I don't understand why there's radio. And I said, well, okay, tell me what you mean. And she said, well, you're listening to what someone else is choosing. Why? Why are you doing that?
Such a powerful question.
Because and I was like, oh my gosh. Well, my gut reaction was, well, because I don't have time to download the MP3 like you do. You know, I've got work to do. I'm busy. But yeah, I was like, well, I don't mind giving up choice. And she was like, nope.
My wife's the same. I actually don't mind listening to radio, but whenever we get in our car, she has to put on her Spotify playlist.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Why am I listening to radio when I can listen to my playlist on Spotify? And by the way, we both know, Rebecca, it doesn't take a lot of time.
It doesn't. And now it's better, now, right?
And it is better, right? Ago. And connectivity, yeah. She puts her phone down, it automatically connects to the Bluetooth and it automatically plays the playlist, right? There's literally zero friction in between now. But exactly. The fact that your daughter was like, from her point of view, she's like, what the hell? Like, why would you let someone else choose what you're listening to? It's so powerful though, right?
She still hates the radio. And this kid doesn't watch TV traditionally, right?
Same TV. Netflix, why am I going to choose? Why kids are the same? Literally, my niece and nephew, they're like, why am I watching TV when I can choose what to watch on YouTube and Netflix? Right.
What is a commercial? What is a commercial, Mom? I don't know what thing is. So yeah,
when you put it like that, it really does.
Yeah. So it's like, are they going to come in and you push out your LMS curriculum to them and they'd be like, okay, sure, we'll do what you know. To some degree they will, right? Because they're not jerks. To some degree. But they're going to be like, this is an archaic 1940s company I've just joined. What are you doing to me? They will want choice. Sure.
Before. I'm already working on it as well myself. Like we have our, I think I told you this last time we spoke, I have our sort of Netflix of HR app.
Yes.
Soon. So you're going to have to download the app. It literally looks exactly like Netflix, but instead of having, you know, comedy, drama, film, movie, it just has a different topics and fields of HR and you can search by content. And I know for a fact that's going to be great for people to have that on demand. Because not everyone can listen to the live show. Not everyone can listen, you know, watch the video, so they prefer to listen, vice versa, etc. Right. And then also we have our Alexa skill and our Alexa flash briefing already in production.
I love it. That's awesome.
People might think that's a bit crazy, but like I personally sit there and brush my teeth and have a shower and listen to podcasts all the time.
Yes.
Because that's the time where I can consume it. So why wouldn't the HR audience want to do that as well?
Right.
And there's literally not one HR app on Alexa yet.
That's crazy.
Because I know the next generation of HR leaders that are coming through will want to consume it via their Alexa flash briefing in the morning.
Yes.
While they're brushing their teeth. So I suppose the question really is in your role now at Legion, then how are you currently preparing the organization then for this future world of learning?
Yeah, so I think we're taking some baby steps toward it. A lot of you know, what we've seen in the past around micro learning, kind of getting these smaller chunks, is really just biting up a larger course into smaller pieces. And we're trying to get to the point of really getting a true meaty, like, you don't want to learn just part of the information, right? Because it's shorter, you need the whole story. So really trying to produce more content that will be relevant on demand. Everything that we build now is built in responsive design so that it will be more mobile and you know, more portable. And really just trying to get more mobile use of leadership development and professional development as a whole by getting some of the apps and things more heavily adopted. But ultimately making for a more agile curriculum than we might have historically planned, so that when leaders come in, we're able to flex to what's the current topic of the day, I guess, in our space, and not try and think about a program that's going to be in place for the next, I don't know, 5 or 10 years. So taking advantage of the learning technologies that we have deployed, really rapid development e-learning tools are where it's at for us. We don't have coders, developers on our learning team. It's all the kind of WYSIWYG DIY types of rapid development tools, and getting those in the arms of more people. So we're trying to exploit social learning as much as possible, where everyone can be responsible for learning and development of others. Clearly there'll be some boundaries within that around who, you know, might need to approve subject matter expertise. Like when I was in healthcare, we had a, you know, chief physical therapist who approved all of the physical therapy advice that we gave just so that no one was giving bad patient treatment advice, but that type of thing. But to the degree that we can, really, you know, leaving it pretty open so that we can break some of those boundaries down and get more of the global learning. We don't have really a knowledge management mission on our team, but I think we're kind of squarely placed to be able to solve some of the knowledge management challenges that we'll also have with, you know, talent who retire in the coming years. So trying to capture as much of that information and then serve it up in a logical way in our learning management system and other platforms.
So important, by the way, that point you just made. I really want to stop for a second to make sure everyone understands that. Like, I think one of the biggest opportunities for this is to capture that information before it leaves the organization. Those people that have been in the business for 10, 20, 30 years, you know, they leave and all of that information goes with them. Why not interview them? And no one's doing that. If any of you are doing that in your organizations, please email me, chris@hrdeaders.com.
I'd love to hear about it.
And I'll forward it on to Rebecca as well. I want to understand how you guys are currently retaining that information. This is a very fascinating conversation, Rebecca. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. Before we wrap up, we're going to jump into the quick fire round.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm going to ask you 5 questions and you have no longer than 30 seconds to give us some amazing answers.
All right. Fantastic.
Ready? What was the number one thing that was holding you back from becoming a senior leader in your field?
That's a good question. So I think many of your folks have said experience, worried that it was experience or confidence. But I think honestly, women aren't very courageous about going after the next role. There's been some research done on that by HBR, a guy named Moore in 2014. That men will go after jobs even if they don't think they're 100% qualified, but women won't. And so I think there's a chance for us to be more bold and courageous and go after it. And if I think back to mine, I would see those line items and think, well, I could do probably 70% of that and not put my hat in the ring. And I think as females in particular, we just need to encourage each other to go for it. And I think that's it. We're too compliant. Rule followers. We're a little bit more rule followers and read those requirements as being absolute necessary where maybe they're not.
Thank you for sharing that. It's very interesting. Food for thought. And I'm not a woman, but I definitely have the same fears that I have in my mind, but it's very interesting to hear that research. I wouldn't have thought of that, but now you've said it makes sense as well. Whereas now I'm kind of in a more position where I try to normally take roles and then learn how to do it.
Whereas,
and I think the reason it's really important that you mentioned that as well is that in the future, you're going to have to move fast and be quick, and those opportunities are not going to be as available as they perhaps were before. So it's
good
to take them. So
absolutely.
What's the best piece of business advice you've ever received?
To learn to ask good questions. Even if you know the answer, asking an authentic question to test understanding where the person's head's at, what new you might learn from it because you think you know, but you might not know everything about it. But if you can ask good questions to get at the root cause of some of those things, you'll make a lot better business decisions.
Very important one, and something that I struggled with as a leader for a long time because I knew the answer. I'm like, here you go.
Right.
Where now I have to like bite my lip and go, what would you do?
Yeah.
Well, what do you think? Something is so simple as that. And then they tell me what they think and I'm like, oh, very interesting, actually.
That's not what I was thinking.
Because that's not what I was thinking. If I would actually just was quiet for once, I would actually learn. On that point, what's one book you'd recommend to our audience and why?
Yeah, so the best book I've read this year is Before Happiness by Sean Aker. It is about how to reframe your thinking into something more positive, which I think we could all benefit from.
Yeah.
So it's a kind of that emotional intelligence space, but really, and it was a one I did by audio. I think not all books are cut out for audiobook, but that was a good one for me.
Could you share one internet resource or any internet resources that you use to keep up to date with current events and or keep yourself more organized or to learn?
Yeah, that's good. So for global news, I actually use Twitter the most. I don't have a lot of time to watch TV, and I like the push notifications that come from some major news sources, and then I'll usually go out to Twitter to find a little bit more of the source of truth if I can, especially if there's a late breaking event like a disaster or something like that. On learning and HR, I use probably LinkedIn the most, and also Twitter, like at conferences. I'm big into following the threads on Twitter.
The last question I have for you before is, you know, what is one thing about your business that you're in right now that you're most excited about?
Yeah, I'm excited about digital transformation, both the impact on the customer experience and really how it's going to change the game for employee development, this virtual connectivity, social learning, AI, machine, all the things we've talked about today.
Such an exciting time right now to be in your role.
I think
to be in business. Do you want to be alive? Do you want to
yes, in general, exactly. All of the above.
Fantastic. Well, look, before we say goodbye, if there's one parting piece of guidance you can give to all listeners out there, what would that be? And also, if they want to get in contact with you and say hello and or ask any questions, what's the best way for them to reach out to you?
Yeah, absolutely. So my piece of advice, if you're a systems thinker like me, and I think many of us are in this field, tell people your logic trail. It seems like we've jumped to conclusions a lot in the way that our brains are wired. And if we tell people our logic trail, I think that gives people a lot more confidence and trust that we're giving them good advice. Systems thinkers connect dots that others don't necessarily see. And so making that more transparent is always a benefit. And the best way to get in contact with me is LinkedIn. It's Rebecca McGuire Ellis, PhD, and I look forward to connecting with new folks out there.
Fantastic. Well, look, thank you again for joining us. It's been a really enjoyable conversation. I think we could talk on the subject for hours.
Yes, we could.
Wrap up. I know you all get to work as well. Guys, head over to hrdleaders.com. As always, you'll find the show notes from the episode. Everything we're talking about will link there. As well, a link to Rebecca's LinkedIn profile and anything she's mentioned will be there for you as well. Rebecca, thank you again for taking the time out to share your journey and experience, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Chris. So great getting to know you.
See ya.